Good morning from the Financial Times. Today is Wednesday, September 30th, and this is your FT News Briefing. Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden and President Donald Trump faced off in Cleveland last night in the first presidential debate of 2020. Did we learn anything? JPMorgan Chase admitted to manipulating the markets and will have to pay a hefty settlement for it. Plus, Wirecard earlier this year announced nearly 2 billion euros was missing from its accounts. How long did Auditor EY know about the fraud? I'm Mark Filippino, and here's the news you need to start your day. It was supposed to be a, quote, debate. But for 90 minutes, it sounded more like this.
$3.5 million from Moscow.
And this.
Go ahead, wait a minute. You get the final word, Mr.
Well, it's hard to get any word in with this clown. Excuse me.
The first presidential debate of 2020 between Joe Biden and Donald Trump was chaotic, with moderator Chris Wallace often losing control and Trump talking over Biden nearly nonstop. Here with me now is Lauren Fedor, our Washington correspondent. Lauren, we're talking right after this debate. In all seriousness, do you think American voters got anything productive out of this?
That's a good question, Mark. And to be honest, I'm not sure if I have a good answer for you. This was chaotic. It was unlike any presidential debate, certainly, that I've ever seen. And I think it's fair to say in modern U.S. history. You know, I'm going to spend the next few hours and days speaking to as many voters as I can. But a few thoughts that I have are, you know, on one hand, for some of these undecided voters, they may have looked at it and seen the president's behavior as overbearing and chaotic, if not downright rude. I think on the other hand, there was a lot of pressure on Joe Biden to convey strength. And I think he managed to keep his cool, apart from a couple of notable asides. You know, at one point he said to the president, will you please just shut up? But, you know, he may have come across as too weak to some voters on the fence. So when it comes to the behavior of the two candidates, you know, some voters may have gleaned something from that.
Yeah. And I think one of the things, if they are making up their minds about anything particular, it probably was one of the few topics that really showed the substance of these candidates, one of those being COVID-19 and how starkly these two candidates approach the pandemic. First, here's Joe Biden.
Between 750 and 1,000 people a day are dying. When he was presented with that number, he said, it is what it is. Well, it is what it is because you are who you are. That's why it is. The president has no plan.
Now, we knew that Joe Biden was going to go after Trump for the 200,000 Americans who died since the pandemic started. How did Trump respond?
Sure. So, you know, the Biden campaign from the get-go has been at pains to make this election a referendum on the Trump presidency and President Trump's handling of COVID in particular. President Trump responded with a lot of the defenses that he's used before. He claimed that he handled this better than anyone else in his position would have. He said that he did the right thing by closing the border to China and later to places like Europe and the UK and Ireland. He stuck to his guns and said that he was the man for the job.
Moving on to one of the other really big moments of the debate was talk about racial inequality and policing because of the George Floyd protests this year. I think one of the things that really stood out to me, Lauren, was how Donald Trump approached Joe Biden's stance on policing. And I want to play a clip of that right now.
The people of this country want and demand law and order, and you're afraid to even say it.
What were some of the comments from both sides that stuck out to you during this part of the debate?
The moderator, Chris Wallace, tried to separate some of these issues out. He wanted to talk about race in America, and then he wanted to talk about this question of law and order and criminal justice. The president, as he has been throughout his campaign, was very keen to keep bringing the conversation back to what he calls the need for law and order, particularly in America's cities and also in its suburbs. This was a point of tension between the two candidates throughout the debate, as Joe Biden tried to, you know, basically portray at one point he called the president straight out a racist.
Lauren Fedor is our Washington correspondent. Thanks, Lauren.
Thanks, Mark.
The next presidential debate is scheduled for Thursday, October 15th. It was just a few weeks ago that EY Global Chairman Carmine DeCibio said he was regretful about the auditor's role in the Wirecard scandal. In a letter, he talked about the firm's failure to sniff out a nearly 2 billion euro fraud at the German payments processor. Here's what he said. I'm quoting the letter here. Even though we were successful in uncovering the fraud, we regret that it was not uncovered sooner. But as one of our reporters found, EY did know about the fraud earlier than it let on. I'm joined by the FT's Frankfurt correspondent, Olaf Storbeck. Olaf, what did your reporting find?
Yeah, we learned about 4 years ago, so in May 2016, an EY employee wrote a whistleblower letter to EY in Germany, basically flagging potential fraud by Wirecard and also pointing out that one local Wirecard employee in India actually tried to bribe a local EY auditor. They're offering some personal compensation if this person was willing to sign off inflated sales numbers. I think it's important to point out that this whistleblower only referred to one of the several strings in the wider Wirecard fraud case. And this whistleblower only, in inverted commas, referred to this India deal where the speculation has long been basically Wirecard managers had a conflict of interest because they might have been behind the Mauritius-based fund, which sold operations in India to Wirecard at a very inflated price. And basically, what we know now is that this EY employee in India flagged this concern about 2 years before it became public knowledge and before short sellers and others basically seized on it.
So given these new revelations, what has EY said in response?
Well, EY said that they flagged these issues to the supervisory board and to the management board of Wirecard back at the time, which is correct. We have documents confirming this. We also have documents confirming that Wirecard mandated EY with a forensic investigation into the allegations. And the interesting thing is what happened then. So basically, 2 years after this investigation started, it was aborted by Wirecard after EY flagged to Wirecard that they found some evidence which might actually support a few of, not all, but a few of those claims made by the whistleblower. And then a few weeks later, Wirecard basically said, oh, it's all fine. We did our own investigation and we don't have to look at this at any more detail. And despite EY finding what they called several observations that cast doubt on the integrity of the account in India. The really interesting fact is that then in the 2017 audit of Wirecard results, the audit team basically said the forensic investigation was concluded and found no evidence of any wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm. So could they face backlash?
Well, I mean, they are already facing quite a lot of pressure. So they are under investigation by the German auditing investigator. They are facing several lawsuits by investors who lost billions in the Wirecard saga. And this revelation that an internal EY whistleblower basically warned them 4 years ago will make it probably more difficult for EY to defend itself in those cases.
Olaf Storbeck is the FT's Frankfurt correspondent. Thanks, Olaf.
Thanks a lot.
This next story deals with something called spoofing. In short, it's a method used to manipulate the markets. And JPMorgan Chase admitted to it, leading to a record settlement with U.S. authorities. Here with me now is the FT's U.S. legal and enforcement correspondent, Kadam Schubber. Kadam, let's start with spoofing. What exactly is it?
Right. Spoofing is a form of market manipulation. In basic terms, it involves traders placing either buy or sell orders and then immediately withdrawing them. And you do this in a sort of rapid fire way. And the idea is that you move prices around up and down despite never actually intending to complete any of the buy or sell orders that you're putting into the market. So between 2008 and 2016, traders on JPMorgan's Treasuries desk and on its precious metals desk manipulated the markets through this conduct called spoofing, where they would place orders, withdraw them, and in doing that, push prices around in order to make a profit.
So, Kadam, JPMorgan Chase has to pay this record settlement for spoofing, $920 million. But it's far from the only one that's been caught doing this. I guess what I'm curious about, Kadam, is why is spoofing on the rise?
It's not necessarily a case that spoofing is on the rise, but it is certainly true that U.S. authorities have focused on this conduct more and more. In 2010, the Dodd-Frank Act sort of explicitly outlawed spoofing. And then since then, you know, the Department of Justice, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, and the SEC, they've brought more and more cases. Spoofing as a crime is really tied to the computerization of trading. The more complex spoofing schemes that, you know, U.S. authorities have charged in recent years involve things like bespoke software that, you know, respond to moves in the market that allow people who commit spoofing to really fine-tune and amplify the impact that their conduct is having on whatever market they're manipulating.
Kadam Shibber is our U.S. legal and enforcement correspondent. Thanks, Kadam.
Thank you.
You can read more on all of these stories at FT.com. This has been your daily FT News Briefing. Make sure you check back tomorrow for the latest business news.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Center.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.